Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome to One Gentleman Plus Two Guys Theologizing, which equals 3GT.
Who's the gentleman?
Yeah, well, I'm going to leave that to our listeners' imaginations to figure out which one of us is the gentleman. I know for me it's Scott.
Oh, sure.
Because he's the barrister in our midst and probably the politest of all of us. So he's really the gentleman, at least in my mind. Well, guys, we have an episode guaranteed to get us in trouble.
Yay, the best kind of episode.
So I thought we might call this episode something like I'm Dreaming of a Reformed Christmas or something like that. There might be listeners that we have that don't realize that when it comes to this particular season of Christmas, it makes a lot of Reformed folk quite nervous. So Kyle, I thought maybe I'd ask you, could you explain why Reformed folk might struggle with the holiday of Christmas? Again, not all of our listeners might understand that. So could you just maybe get us started by explaining why that might be the case?
Sure. If you want to take a little walk down memory lane with me. Reformed Christianity, which came about in a very systematized way out of the Protestant Reformation. The Protestant Reformation dealt with many very dangerous and even deadly abuses that arose out of what is now called the Roman Catholic Church. And principal and central to many of the disagreements that the Protestant Reformation, especially among the Reformed and the Presbyterian, maybe not as much the Lutherans and the Anglicans, but at the center of many of our disagreements with Roman Catholicism was the issue of worship. And we won't dredge up every issue that we disagree with Roman Catholics on, only to say that Roman Catholic worship and Reformed worship these aren't slight disagreements. They're very significant. And one of the questions that arose during the time of the Protestant Reformation was, what about festival days? Now, throughout the history of the church, dating back to the early church fathers, you can't support this from apostolic witness, but definitely during the early church fathers, certain celebrations, certain festivals entered into the church. Easter was the very first festival that began to be celebrated by the fathers. And gradually through the centuries, those festivals became many. And coming into the 15th, 16th century Roman Catholic Church, there were appointed festival days that I actually think outnumbered normal calendar days. I think there were more festival days than there were non-festival days in the Roman Church calendar. And the Roman Catholics attached to these festival days, days like Easter, days like Christmas, days like All Saints Day, things like that, the Roman Catholic Church attached a lot of idolatry and false worship and superstition to these days. These days that the church set apart were declared to be holy days. It's where we get the word holiday from. And by holy days, they meant that there was an inherent holiness in these days that distinguished them from other days of the week. On top of that, these festival days, these holy days, were required to be kept by members in the church, and so it became this tremendous burden. You had to rest from all your labors and your normal work, and if you're doing that more times than you're doing your normal daily activities in a calendar year, that gets very burdensome. and those holy days aren't usually what we think of the way we might celebrate Christmas or something like that. These were days that imposed a tremendous burden upon people's consciences, where they had to cease from doing this and doing that and enjoying this and enjoying that. And then the Catholic Church also used these holy days as times to, as occasions where people could merit or expiate their sins. And so these became days that they could observe to get time off of purgatory or to find forgiveness for their sins and to actually merit that type of forgiveness, which goes completely contrary to the gospel of free grace. And then the holy days also became times of tremendous worship of the saints or the veneration of the saints. Protestants always call that worship, whatever. Roman Catholics would not call it worship, but it is. And so the Protestant reformers look at these holy days and they see all these superstitions and all this wickedness and all this abuse that is attached to these days. And especially among Presbyterians, there was a great rejection of that, saying, absolutely not. We are going to have no part in these superstitious holy days. God has appointed one day a week, the Lord's Day, that is to be kept holy, where we are to worship Him. And that mindset has at one time, especially among Presbyterians, was really the mindset. But as the centuries have worn on, some Presbyterians have become more comfortable saying, you know, there's nothing inherently evil about celebrating Christmas or Easter or Ascension Day or what have you. And so they've gradually begun to do those things again. But for some Presbyterians, even yet today, they look at these days and they say, no. Those are filled with superstitious, false, idolatrous worship. And they have no part of a Christian's life. Mm-hmm. That's my stroll down memory lane.
No, that's a very, very helpful backdrop to the situation in which we find ourselves today. Do you think that, so we would say that, would we say that to be reformed then means that a Christian should not, unless, and since we're in the Christmas season, should not observe Christmas? Is that what we're saying that history has brought us to?
I personally don't think that's a fair conclusion to make. And the reason why, and maybe we can spell this out a little more, within what we call the Reformed tradition, and I mean that as a confessional tradition, a tradition that holds to the Reformed confessions, there has been a diversity of opinion on this matter. Presbyterians have by and large historically rejected them. Our brothers and sisters on the continent that developed the Reformed churches, especially what we call the three forms of unity, things like that, these days have been kept by them, not as holy days, but as helpful days, so that within what we define broadly as Reformed, as much as some people might wrinkle their nose at it, there's a diversity of practice. There is, just historically, that's a fact we've got to deal with. There's a diversity of practice among those who are reformed. So do I think that it's a point of being reformed to not keep these days? I personally don't.
Mm-hmm. Although, again, if we were talking about certain branches of the church, such as the Puritans, that certainly would have been the case with them, that they would have really viewed anyone who would keep the day or a church that would keep that day as going back towards Catholicism. And some people, in order to justify honoring certain events in historic Christianity, such as the birth of Christ, would point to the fact that the Old Testament, there were holy days or feasts to commemorate certain acts of God in the life of his people. You have certainly what was instituted in the law, a holy day like the Passover. Others would point to what takes place in the book of Esther when the feast of Purim is set aside to commemorate God's deliverance of the Jewish people during the days of Esther. And so they would use that for their justification. What do you guys think about when you hear those types of arguments? Does that ring your Christmas bell? or you're not very comfortable with those arguments?
I'm not comfortable with those arguments because that would kind of hint that we have obligations to keep special and holy days, which I don't think we do. Mm-hmm. We have an obligation to keep one holy day a week, and that's what we do. I guess what I would do in that case when I hear that argument is, so why don't we keep them now? If they were so holy and so important then, why don't we keep them now? If we don't keep them now, then clearly we don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah, go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, I think with that, I think you begin to walk on some very thin ice when you're appealing to the Old Testament festival days. I know Purim is a little bit different in character because Purim was never in one sense divinely sanctioned like some of the other, the Feast of Tabernacles or some of the other feasts that we think of. But, you know, just as Scott has said, this is part of the ceremonial law of the Old Testament. And in Acts 15, as they're debating the issue of does the ceremonial law continue, let us remember what the apostle said. Our fathers could not bear this burden. Why would we lash this burden on the back of the Gentiles? You know, there's some people who want to go back to Old Testament times and just think it's great to keep some of these things and, oh, let's observe them. And we do so in such an anachronistic way. We do so in such a 21st century way, forgetting this was a burden that our forefathers could not shoulder. And so we need to understand that our freedom and our liberty in Christ has set us free from those burdens and from keeping those festivals. So personally, I'm not persuaded. I think the question of Purim would probably be the closest to me for saying, you know, might that give some legitimacy? But I remember even Francis Turretin argued in favor of people being allowed to be left to the liberty of conscience, whether or not we have festival days or not. Francis Turretin even said, you know, appealing to Purim is not as easy as you think it is. You better slow down because it of itself does not give warrant to keep these festival days.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it does... A proper hermeneutic or interpreting of the Bible, we would see that the Old Testament feast days have all been fulfilled in what Jesus has done for us and provided for us spiritually. And the only holy day that we really have confessionally, as we look at our confessional documents, is the Lord's Day, because that day, in a sense, all of the Old Testament feasts and sacrifices and all of that has culminated in Christ. And by virtue of his resurrection, he's given us a one holy day per week in order to worship him. And part of that is also, I think, comes in the freedom of the gospel age, because God knew that rather than his kingdom being primarily limited to one nation that was governed under those kinds of laws and where everything could be duly done, now the gospel through Christ has gone out to the nations of the earth. And so churches find themselves in a variety of culture environments. And so to require too much of the church in any given culture would be too, as you just read, Kyle, would be too great a burden for the church to bear. So we would agree confessionally that the church should not be honoring certain holy days other than the Lord's Day. So we're in agreement on that, right? So far?
So far.
we can see each other, so we're all nodding our heads, yes. Smiling so far.
And smiling, knowing what's about to come.
Yeah, so smiling, knowing what's about to come. So let's talk a little bit then about some more practical things, because we do live in a culture where obviously Christmas is all around us as soon as maybe even before Halloween ends. we're bombarded with Christmas around us. And let's think of it, first of all, in the life of the church. Do you think it's wrong? Again, we're saying we wouldn't have special holy days set aside to honor Christmas, but is it wrong for us then as Reformed pastors and elders to speak to the holiday? I mean, is our only basic posture to be that we all have to be Scrooge? Maybe it was Scrooge Reformed. Maybe that's the question we need to ask. We go around bah humbugging all there is about Christmas. Or do you think that, for instance, during this season, it's okay for a Reformed minister to preach on the Incarnation? Let's talk about that for a few moments.
Well, I don't know why it would be inappropriate for a preacher to ever preach on the Incarnation. And it seems to me we are being, our consciences are being bound by the season if we say a preacher can't preach on the Incarnation in the month
of
December.
Or if we say he has to preach on the
right.
Incarnation.
Right. I mean, I think it's neither here nor there. I don't think we should let the culture that we live in dictate what a preacher can and can't preach about.
I have some friends who would be very anti-Christmas. And some of my most vehement anti-Christmas friends would agree with me in about how I'm about to answer this question, and some of them wouldn't, but I agree with Scott. I think it sets a dangerous precedence if you say around December 25th, you cannot preach on the Incarnation. You are imposing an anti-church calendar. And you're actually falling prey to the same thing that some of these disgruntled, bah humbug, you know, good Presbyterians? you're falling prey to the very thing that they are claiming they don't want to see in the church. And so I would never say you absolutely cannot preach on the Incarnation. And in fact, I would go one step further and say I can think of many practical reasons why it might be wise for a pastor to preach on the Incarnation. Mm-hmm. It's the time of year where everybody is thinking about the birth of Christ. They're doing so in Second Commandment violations. They're doing so in very sentimental and romantic ways. But what better opportunity for the public witness of the church to say, no, let us proclaim to you what the Incarnation actually is, what it means for God in the flesh. You know, the Apostle Paul calls this the mystery of godliness. So I think practical reasons why it would be wise. I would never say to a pastor, you have to, and if you don't, oh, you're in sin. But I also wouldn't tell a pastor who decides to do it that he's in sin. So mm-hmm.
I think that's the type of argumentation you see in someone like a Martin Lloyd-Jones when he's commenting on this issue. He talks about that, again, we don't have to do it, but wisdom would say it's on people's minds. Why not speak to what's on their minds already and see it as an open door to be able to bring the gospel to them?
I'll hear your Martin Lloyd-Jones and raise you a Charles Spurgeon. Then we can do our next episode on gambling, Reformed gambling. But, you know, Spurgeon often said the same thing. Spurgeon preached Christmas sermons. And I love the way he would introduce those sermons by saying, Christmas is a popish holiday for which I have no toleration. But you know what? Since you're all thinking about it, let me give you a message now suitable to the season. So
that's right. I think it's important that if we are going to use the season to preach, whether it's Christmas or any other season to preach, that we don't leave Christ in the idolatrous viewpoint of our culture. So in other words, we don't just leave Jesus in the manger, so to speak. We need to make sure that if we're preaching Christ, that we're preaching why he became flesh and what his ultimate purpose was in coming in this world. And so it's important to, again, make the whole counsel of God, the whole gospel of God to bear upon people's minds when we do take those opportunities to do that. Well, what about maybe getting a little bit more personal, and instead of just thinking only of the church as a corporate body and its worship services, what about individual Christians and observing certain traditions around this holiday, gift giving, Christmas trees,
Christmas cookies.
Yeah. Can we eat Christmas cookies? Have you guys been eating any Christmas
chickens? You definitely cannot watch Hallmark Christmas movies. That is inconsistent with a credible profession. I don't really mean that. Don't run with that, anybody. So. Yeah.
Well, I was going to just have you talk to my wife because she likes those movies in particular.
Yeah, my daughter's been trying to get us to watch a few of those.
I've had a couple Christmas cookies. I'll confess right now.
You've eaten cookies sacrificed to idols?
Without raising issues of conscience, right, Kyle?
There we go. That's right. That's right. That's a true apostolic pattern right there.
Is that, if you eat a Santa cookie, is that like a glorified iconoclasm?
As to seriously answer the question, because I'm Mr. Serious, when it comes to what Christians do in their own home, I am very content to leaving people to the liberty of conscience. I find it to be a little different and a little stickier of a question when you're dealing with public worship, because you know, you want to be sensitive to people's consciences. You don't want to bind people in any ways that would be inappropriate. But when it comes to a private observance, I leave it to the liberty of conscience. The thing that I would say is, even if you do celebrate aspects of Christmas, if you bring certain traditions in, to be very, very guarded against the true abuses that have and continue to surround much of a celebration of Christmas. And I don't mean by that commercialism. Personally, I'm not overly concerned about commercialism at this time of the year. It's good for our economy, and I like a growing economy. But the abuses that would, you know, make Christmas a necessary obligation. I remember the first time I did not go to church on Christmas Eve. Some of my closest friends had decided that I was literally that I was not a Christian, or the abuses. There's a lot of false worship that happens around Christmas time. There's a lot of really inappropriate worship. There is a lot of idolatry. There is a lot of superstition that surrounds so much of this thing we call a celebration of Christmas. And so, you know, just because I would say, let it be according to the liberty of your conscience, you never have liberty to sin in those ways. And so I would just caution people, be careful of that. Be very self-conscious about that, and be guarded.
Mm-hmm. Scott, any other thoughts?
I would just concur with Kyle. I think that in lines with the law of God's word, we have the right to do what we want to do. And so as long as you're not making an idolatrous, you know, time of worship in your home over Christmas, if you want to do it, that's great. If you don't want to do it, that's great. To tell somebody they can't worship or they can't celebrate Christmas or have anything like that, we're just putting that same burden on them that the Catholic Church did in saying you have to. We're binding consciences where we can't bind consciences. But I do agree with Kyle that we have to warn people against the potential of idolizing this time. I mean, it is what it is. It's kind of like Thanksgiving as far as I'm concerned. If you don't want to eat turkey on Thanksgiving, that's your business. I'm going to eat turkey.
Right. There's a real freedom that we have, and we just have to make sure that in honoring anything that's in our culture, that we don't overstep the law of God. So if someone wants to give us a gift just because it's Christmas time, then we should probably receive it and be thankful for it. But if it comes with strings attached or it's a gift that would violate our conscience, then obviously we'd have to reject that. Or if we want to participate in any other type of activity that's around this time, we just got to make sure, for instance, if we're going to buy the gifts, then going into great amounts of debt or anything like that would be a violation of God's word. And so we should certainly avoid those types of things.
You know, with all of this too, One of my friends who's really challenged me in the way that I think about this, who's very anti-Christmas, said, you know, one of the questions he has to continually ask himself is, you know, does God hate Christmas as much as I hate Christmas? And I really appreciate, I appreciate that way of thinking, saying, I don't want to go further than where God would go. And I would turn that question the same to those who are very pro-Christmas. Does God love Christmas as much as you love it? Mm. You know, I have very nostalgic memories of Christmas. I really do. But I think that's a helpful, maybe one of those ways to help rein us in a little bit on either side of the question.
Mm-hmm. Well, I still keep hoping one day they'll make the electric shot shooting gallery again, because I really, that's one of the things I remember about Christmas. But I do think that as a Reformed believer, if we are going to be pretty strong in our sentiments about this holy day, that we still have to make sure that we're acting and responding in love to people. And I would say that someone who really has a strong anti-Christmas viewpoint would be considered biblically as a stronger brother. And so we do have to be careful with our weaker brothers. It would be a horrible thing that if we have a weaker brother who is in some way associating this day with the birth of Christ and love for Christ, that our actions or toward them would put stumbling in their minds about their love for the Lord. So I think we do have to watch that as well, even if we're opposed to the holiday. Would you guys agree to that?
Yeah. By and large.
I think so. I think it's important to, when dealing with people, to realize that everybody lives in a context. Mm-hmm. And so you have to understand a person's context to understand where they're coming from. I imagine that people who are saved specifically from the Roman Catholic Church and the burdens that they put on it are typically the ones who are most opposed to this idea of Christmas. And so if you understand that about people, understand their context, it'll help us deal with them in a loving way. You know, I was not raised in a Roman Catholic Church. I wasn't a part of that. So I don't have all the baggage there, but there are other people who are. So I want to make sure that we see that, and we see that in people, so we can address these issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, any other light or darkness that we want to shed on this subject? I'm sure by now we've made all of our listeners upset in one way or another. So we'll just bring this issue of 3GT to a close. We're grateful for you listening to us. And if you'd like to hear more or learn more about 3GT, you can go over to our website at 3GT.xyz. And this giving time of year, I'll exercise a little crass commercialism here. We do rely on the support of friends that listen to this podcast. So if you would like to donate, you'll find information there. Thanks for tuning in to 3GT.